Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan. And Mark Holland in for Lynette Morgan this week for Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat in studio, ready to take your calls right now at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Lots of questions the first hour about prostate health, and we still have more questions about this. We have Jesse from Tacoma. More about prostate health. What's your question specifically for the doctors, Jesse?
Hello, Jesse.
Hello, doctor. Yes, I've been listening to you for so long, and I take notes, but I can't read my own handwriting.
You must be a doctor.
Well, you know, I used to read doctors' records.
Uh-huh.
And I picked up on their abbreviations and all that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I even have suggestions for music, but let's not get to that. Yeah. You're doing good enough, I mean, but you sound like you want to get a few new things.
I do. I like new.
Yeah.
But before you get any further, let me
know what? Oh, Taylor Swift. Do you know Taylor Swift is in town? That's new. Jerry, you said new.
That's true.
Major traffic issues today.
Listen, I was just back working for this past week doing a video for public TV, and we'd go out to dinner and all these artsy theater music people, and they were quizzing each other and they were talking about favorite bands and favorite musicians and favorite songs. And you know what? It was all Greek. I didn't recognize a single person they talked about. I mean, it's true.
I'm totally
ignorant of the musical and the social scene. I'm not on social media. I don't know anything about that world. I'm a science guy. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. But your comment about handwriting, just for fun. When I started my first practice, it was in a little grain and cattle town in southern Idaho. And I took over for an older family doc. He'd been in town for 30 or 40 years, and he had never dictated anything. Everything he did was handwritten chart notes. And so, you know, when I took over his practice, he said, "And here are all my records. And so good luck." And he walks out. And I looked at his charts, and I couldn't read anything. I mean, those charts were totally worthless to me. I had no idea what was going on with any patient because I could not read one word of his handwriting. And I hunted him up. I said, "If you ever get sued, how do you know what these chart notes say? Because I can't read them." And he chuckled and he said, "Sonny, they say any damn thing I want them to say." Now, the reassuring thing was that in this rural town, my malpractice insurance was $280 a year.
Wow.
$280. Because there had never been a malpractice suit in the county. Mm. No one had ever been sued in the history of the county. And so malpractice was pretty cheap.
Indeed. That does not exist anymore.
No, it certainly does not. I'm terrified at what I write those checks for all of my doctors today.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry to digress. How can I help you today? What's going on? Now that we've commented on handwriting and music.
Yeah, okay. Well, you often talk about prostate cancers that are more or less inactive and probably nothing would happen.
That's the majority, yes.
Like six or seven Gleason. But I had the 12 things where they take biopsies.
Mm-hmm.
And this was without an MRI or anything.
Sure.
And about half of them were positive in the six or seven range, but one of them was a 9 Gleason.
Ooh. Okay.
And I've gone through 8 weeks of radiation, which has more or less destroyed my prostate, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I had gone from like a 20 PSA down to a 0.2. PSA post-treatment.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And now I've been on Lupron, of course, and I haven't been in for maybe 4 or 5 months, but I have an upcoming evaluation next month, and I'm just sort of wondering what I should ask the urologist at that time.
Okay.
And, depending on what he says, which I don't know, I'm going to have a PSA before I go to see him.
Yes, well, you certainly should. Okay, well, first of all, the Lupron is going to suppress all of your gonadotropins. So you're not going to make testosterone or estrogen or cortisol, or, I mean, all of your steroids are being suppressed right now. And most guys don't feel very good when they're on Lupron.
For sure.
Yet, you know, it suppresses drive, ambition. People don't tolerate stress as well. Depression becomes a very common side effect. Men are designed to have a significant amount of testosterone in our brains, and when we get it all suppressed, we don't do very well. So, you know, the question is how long to keep you on Lupron.
Right.
And part of that is going to depend on, you know, your urologist's philosophy. Used to be they put people on Lupron permanently, but that turned out to have so many side effects. The guys developed such severe osteoporosis. The suicide rate tripled because they were so miserable. They'd literally rather die than continue to live that way. So it, you know, they shifted it and said, okay, most doctors now are doing Lupron intermittently. They'll do certain period of time on, three to 6 months on, and then 3 to 6 months off, 3 to 6 months on, 3 to 6 months off, to kind of let you recover. The question is, at some point, are we going to be able to allow your testosterone to rise up to a more reasonable level? And that's where, because that's going to improve your quality of life. You know, the idea is to not just keep you existing, but let you actually live. And, you know, we need those androgens to really have a joyous life. So, you know, and that's always a question. When you've got 50%, you got 6 out of your 12 biopsies positive, that tells me your tumor is widespread. It covers about 50% of your prostate volume. And when one of those is a 9, that's pretty aggressive too. You know?
Yeah, so we're going to be checking for metastatic disease, of course.
Yes, and that's the big worry, is how much of it has already spread. And let me kind of tell you about the physiology there. Okay. Every tumor starts with one cell. One cell undergoes a mutation in which it now becomes an aggressive a cell that starts to grow much faster than it should, that starts making its own testosterone, its own growth factors. And depending on how fast that cell reproduces, Some of these cells will reproduce every 30 to 60 days. Others only reproduce about once a year. And that makes a big difference in how fast the tumor grows. Okay?
Sure.
You have to get millions of cells together to have a tumor big enough to even find it, because each cell is tiny, tiny, tiny. And so most of the time, people have had their cancer for years and years before we find it, before it gets big enough to identify. The odds are... MRI is very good at picking them up early. If we see a rising PSA, in our clinic, we check PSA 3-4 times a year. If we see a PSA that doubles in less than a year, if you go from 1 to 2 in less than a year, we start looking for why. Okay. We do a 4K test, which is looking at four different kinases that will give us a statistical probability of you having a prostate cancer. And then we probably send you for a volumetric MRI of your prostate, trying to find a tumor as early as possible. Because the earlier we find it, the better chance we've got of intervening before we've got trouble and before you've got spread. So, you know, it sounds to me like you did not get frequent PSAs, or you would not have had
They put it off for like 6 or 7 years, it seemed like. And then it went from just normal up to all of a sudden it was high when they finally did it.
Yeah. And see, we disagree with that. I know the thing is that they'll do an annual PSA once a year up until about 70 or 75. And then many clinics now will not do them ever again. If you don't have a prostate cancer by 75, they say, well, it's okay, because even if he gets a prostate cancer now, something else will kill him before the prostate cancer. So why bother looking? And they don't even do the PSA. We disagree.
The only reason they did mine is that I initiated treatment with VA, so they wanted to do all the tests to get me as a new patient, and they found it.
Yep. You know. And so that's the issue, is we disagree with that. We check PSAs frequently, and if we ever see one rising, we start looking to see why is it rising. And we don't stop taking them when you're 70 or 75, because I don't plan on my patients dying at the normal rate. I plan on my patients making it to 110. And so,
Mark and I were talking before we went on air and wondering how long did you want to live? And so we were guessing, we were betting on it.
For me.
So I'm trying to clean up my house here so it won't be a mess for whoever's.
Yeah, well, let's do it this way. Let's not let you die for another 10 or 20 years, okay? But let's get you a life that's worth living. That's the key. You know, I don't want to live a long time in the nursing home having my diaper changed and drooling down my bib, you know? I want to live while I'm alive. I want to still travel and do things and chase my wife round and round the house.
And keep us all on our toes.
And keep all my staff on their toes. Come on, work, row faster.
Maybe we should be cutting back a little bit on that.
Oh, hey, Jesse, you can call every week and tell him to cut back on that whip.
That's right.
I've been listening for so long that I called. This is like my third call in 6 months.
Right. Well, Jesse, we're gonna give you the same advice we gave the other guys as far as the resveratrol, the lycopene containing foods, the green tea is a biggie. Really hit that green tea aggressively.
I've been doing some green tea because I've heard you talk about that.
Yeah, but you try and get it up around 5 cups a day. And that's just 5 tea bags a day. And if you don't like to drink it that much, like I said, sprinkle it in your food. It adds a little crunchies.
I like the caffeine.
Okay.
I have some tea bags that have the matcha powder plus the leaves.
Uh-huh. And so they absorb it more efficiently from matcha. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I have another quick question on the same sort of topic.
Okay.
I heard you talk about BRCA2, and that's what I usually associate that with breast cancer. And I had talked to my person who did the radiology, and I told him that my sister had HER2, I think, mutation. And I said, does that give you any information about the, you know, situation that I'm in with my tumor? And he said, no, it doesn't cross between the sexes, that females in your family don't really relate to the males as far as any information about genetic mutations. Do you think that's true?
I'm not sure. I suspect. What we're finding really is most of the things that apply to breast cancer in women also apply to prostate cancer in men. They're both hormonally related tumors. And it seems that everything that raises the risk of breast cancer in women raises the risk of prostate cancer in men. And most of the things that lower the risk of prostate cancer in men lower the risk of breast cancer in women. Now, HER2 is a protein that has been identified in some breast cancers. And a high level of HER2 causes the tumors to grow faster, which is the downside. But the good side is high level of HER2 also is more likely to respond to the hormonal therapies for women. So it's remember Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine? Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. Well, in this case, the thing that is strong enough to hurt is strong enough to help with the therapy. So
it could be HER2 and also triple negative, though.
Well, triple negative is a scary one. Yeah. You know, triple negative is the equivalent in breast cancer of the androgen insensitive tumor in prostate cancer. Okay.
Right.
If it doesn't have hormone receptors, it grows faster, nestier, and spreads quicker. And that's true for both breast cancer and prostate cancer. Hang on a minute. We're going to be back after this break. We've got to take a break, but we'll be back.
Okay, hang on, Jesse. We'll continue in just a moment. Call in with your questions today, 800-465-8770. It's Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat this morning. Back in just a few moments.
And I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make you mine. I'll be your bidding and be at your beck and call.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. Doing a little jig in here. Doctors are dancing around the studio.
I tell you. Well, you know, this kind of music.
Yeah.
We gotta do our practice our line dances.
Okay.
When we redo the studio to have it video,
okay,
we're gonna play this kind of music, and you and I and our host are all gonna be doing a line dance.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds I took one like line dancing lesson and I was terrible at it. Hey, we've got still talking with Jesse, wrapping up all the questions today about prostate health.
I know this is Leading Edge Prostate today.
Well, it's an important topic.
Doctor, have you ever heard of Mississippi John Hurt?
Mississippi John.
H-U-R-T. Mississippi John Hurt, H-U-R-T.
Nope.
He had
about
three different versions of Staggerly.
Oh, and, hey. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll have to look it up. But now,
let's see, what was I going to say? Okay, we covered both of the things that I called about, really, which was the, you know, my upcoming evaluation and also the HERS 2 or, cross-sex.
My problem is I have not seen a study on prostate cancer and HERS too, because
that's what my doctor said too.
Yeah, and so because I haven't seen a study doesn't mean that there's not a connection. It just means we're ignorant. We don't know, and there's a big difference in my not knowing and it not being true. So
it only makes sense to me, but I don't know.
Well, I would chalk it up as a distinct possibility, but I just have to say I don't know at this point. So, okay.
Can I give you my Adam and Eve theory?
Adam and Eve, go right ahead. I'm always in favor.
Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden were supposed to live forever up until they disobeyed God, and then it was kaput after that. Mm-hmm. But I think what God was doing was intervening in mutations in their cells so that they never suffered any changes from what he had first created, and they didn't have any mutations. But when he took that away because they had disobeyed him, over the years, little by little, these mutations creeped in, and humans stopped living until 900, and now they're down to, 70 or 80.
76.4 last year in America.
Right. But, God can do whatever he wants. So he was intervening in various pathologies that humans would normally get along with other animals.
Okay.
But he did a special thing for humans because they were created in his image. But now we've lost that blessing from God. But in the world to come, we will get it back again if we're lucky.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I can't tell you if it's right or wrong, quite frankly. my concept of deity, I guess, is a little bit differently. So let me move into the metaphysical here for a minute, all right? I look at the universe.
I moved there already.
I look at the universe and I say, okay, I live in a galaxy that has 100 billion stars. And whoever created that galaxy keeps track of it all at the same time. And he put that galaxy of 100 billion stars in a universe that has 100 billion galaxies. And he keeps track of all of that.
Yeah.
Well, the Bible knows the name of each one of those stars.
Yes, not just the stars. He knows every hair on my head. Now, that means he has to keep track of less and less as the years go by because I'm losing hair on my head. But still.
I understand.
But still, that creature, that being that can do all of that is something so far beyond me that my idea of really understanding that being is about the same as the gnat that flies up my nose when I'm out running, understanding my concept of pathophysiology of a disease. I am that gnat to that being. And I look at that and I say, okay, that is so far beyond me. There ain't no way on heaven or earth, I'm going to really understand it. Mm-hmm. But all I can do is say, I'm going to do the best I know how to do with the skill sets and the knowledge and the understanding I've been granted. And he'll either be happy with it or he won't. But, that part's beyond my control.
We've unraveled just a tiny bit of God's creation.
Oh, yes. Just the human body boggles my mind, and I am often appalled at how little I understand of this. And the scary thing is, I seem to understand more of it than a lot of folk. and I know how ignorant I am. Anyway, thank you for the call, sir. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay, that opens up a line for you. You're listening today, 800-465-8770. And John in Vancouver been holding on a long time, and another question about prostate health.
Holy
he wants to
mackerel.
Know about what kind of food is good or bad for prostate health. John, you're on with the doctors.
Hello, John.
Thank you for your military and your community service, doctor. I'd like to know what food is bad and what food is good for prostate.
Okay. Good
especially
for prostate.
Supplements, you know.
Yes, good for prostate. Green tea. Black tea's better for your heart. Green tea's better for cancer. Okay, so lots of green tea. Pomegranate juice In fact, anything with a lot of polyphenols, all the brightly pigmented fruits and vegetables. So if you're going to go in the grocery store and you see those bright yellow and orange and red, you know, everything from veggies to bell peppers, buy them and eat them.
Yep.
Pomegranate, because pomegranates are rich in polyphenols, and there are some studies showing that pomegranate juice can inhibit the growth of prostate cancers. And I'd say just buy the pomegranates and eat the seeds and all.
Right.
All that fiber is going to do really wonderful things for the biome in your gut.
Right. Remember when you buy pomegranate juice, be careful it doesn't have added sugar in it. Just the palm itself.
It should be almost a little bit tart. It should not be sweet.
Right.
But just eat the pomegranates. That way you get the fiber for your gut as well as the polyphenols.
Tomatoes
and cooked and frozen tomatoes for some reason are better. You release more of the lycopene in the processing of the tomatoes. So tomato paste, tomato sauce is actually better than fresh tomatoes as far as the prostate goes.
Right. Resveratrol.
Oh yes, and resveratrol. And don't get your high dose resveratrol from lots of red wine.
Yeah.
The alcohol is bad. But you can buy resveratrol.
Yeah.
You can buy the resveratrol and you know, most resveratrol capsules are 100 milligrams a piece. I, from our clinic, had them make us some 350 milligram capsules. And I take 3 of those a day. So I get more than 1,000 milligrams of resveratrol a day in my normal supplementation.
And then men's formula from our clinic?
Men's formula is good. It has the DIM, the diindolyl methane, which is really good for your prostate.
And then avoid barbecued meats.
I'm sorry. What did you say, sir?
What is bad for you?
What is bad for you are charred meats. Charred meats. Stay away from barbecued and high temperature seared foods.
Right.
And meats are the worst of all to be seared, but I would not even want to sear my vegetables either.
And processed meat of all kind is bad. High sugar are so sugar itself is really pro-inflammatory and bad.
Yes, it is.
So you want to avoid sugar. What else, Jerry? Dairy. Dairy is controversial. A lot of people feel that dairy may not be good if you're trying to avoid cancer. Mm-hmm. So avoid dairy as well. I don't know about eggs. I hear positive and negative. I would maybe do more egg whites and reduce the yolk a little bit. I don't know if that helps. So I'm not 100% certain about eggs.
Personally, I eat the yolk.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have a cholesterol issue, there's no reason why you can't eat the yolk. Eggs are a good source of protein and very nourishing and a good go-to all the time. So it's difficult. Eggs is a difficult one for me. But certainly dairy, meat, sugar, processed food of all kind, those are all a big no-no.
And on the other hand, I like the fermented dairy.
Fermented yogurt. Foods are good. Yeah,
yeah. Once you ferment it, you're getting rid of a lot of the lactose.
Yeah.
And you're providing a lot of bacteria and so on that are actually good for your gut.
Yeah. Fermented foods are very good. Gut microbiome is important to maintain healthy. So it's, you know, it's your brain of the body. So you have one brain in the brain, and then the second one is in the gut.
You got it. Does that help you, sir?
Any supplements that are really bad for the prostate?
Bad for the prostate. I'm trying to think of any. I can't think of anything right offhand because most of the time, if it's being designed as a supplement, it's designed, you know, to enhance function. And there's usually some studies showing that it helps. I'll have to look for that.
Yeah.
You know what? You just asked a question that I have not seriously considered. Mm. So I'm going to have to do a literature search and see what common supplements might have an adverse effect on cancer. That'd be a great thing to know.
Fascinating, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Enlarge the prostate, I guess, is the main thing.
Yeah, enlargement of the prostate is quote, a normal process, but it seems to be related in large measure to a man's declining progesterone levels.
Hmm.
See, young men have almost as much progesterone as young women have. And as we age, our progesterone levels drop down to the point that by 50 or 60, you can't even find progesterone in most men. And that's one of the reasons I like to have progesterone in men, is to try to inhibit that enlargement of the prostate. Once it's big, the progesterone doesn't seem to make it smaller, but it seems to do a pretty good job of keeping it from getting big, and that's my goal.
What would be a good number for that, for, say, an 88-year-old man?
Well, again, I'm going to bet your natural level is essentially undetectable. You can't even find any where you are right now. And I would try to keep my level up around 2. I generally myself run between 2 and 3. Samara likes to be a little more conservative with that. She keeps it a little on the low side of 2. I like to go a little on the high side of 2. But, you know, that's honest doctors who are allowed to disagree.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
really,
John.
Okay. Thank you.
That opens up a line for you if you're listening today. 800-465-8770. Folks, we actually got a couple of calls that are not about prostate health coming up after
the break. My goodness. And are they sure they called the right number?
And they're both women.
Oh, okay. Well, that would answer it.
Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat in just a few moments. Yeah. Okay, welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat, and our first couple of calls on the line from women today. First of all, taking a call from Gloria in Puyallup. She has a question about fibrosis in the lungs. Ooh. Gloria, welcome to the show.
Okay. Hello, Gloria.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes, I'm glad we got a woman calling. I was starting to think this was we're going to rename the show to Leading Edge Prostate.
Thank you, Gloria.
Okay. I am 86. I have a history of lupus. The lungs have been a problem for the last 4 or 5 years, and sure. The CAT scans have showed fibroids. Now there's another lump in my lung that I just had a PET scan done. Does the fibroids in the lungs, which is the bottom lower level of each lung, create or cause cancerous tumors, or can they?
Okay. Are we talking about, when you say fibroids, are you talking about fibrous nodule or the fibrous infiltration of the lung?
I tell you where the doctor told me that it came from was from taking too much nitrofurantoin for UTIs.
Okay. That's
and he said that has a tendency to cause fibrosis in the lungs.
Okay. Yeah. Well, see, fibrosis in the lungs is usually more of a generalized process as opposed to a nodular situation. When you got fibroids, we're thinking of nodules. When you think of fibrosis, we're thinking of a more diffuse process in which the connective tissues in the lung are getting stiff and don't let them expand and contract as well as they should. And that decreases the oxygenation of your blood because the lung can't expand as big as it should when you take a deep breath, and then it can't empty as well when you try to exhale.
Correct.
Okay, so that's a fibrosis problem.
Okay.
Okay, fibroids, we're talking about nodular growths. And, mm-hmm. you know, that is a slightly different problem. And go ahead.
No, the last April and January of this year, I was in the hospital with pneumonia, which I go in every single year with pneumonia. But this time I got 2 times I got to go in. And then there was on the bottom part of where the, I guess, fibrosis not saying it correctly. There was a large white spot.
Okay. That's and more worse.
That's why I finally requested. I said, I'm not playing games with this. I said, I want the next step study done to see whether I have cancer or not.
Yes.
And so they did the PET scan. I have no idea what it says because I read it, doesn't understand a bit, and it'll be weeks before I can get to see my doctor. So I'm a little apprehensive as to what the findings were.
Yeah. Yeah, and that always drives me crazy, and I don't understand that. Back when when I was a country doctor, I did things a bit differently. If I sent a woman out, or in fact, if I sent anybody out for an evaluation for a tumor, I made sure that the day that I got the report, I saw the patient.
Right. But, you know, it is possible that she can see it on her my chart. So the report will be there. Now, reading it and interpreting it might be a little bit hard.
That's the problem. She should be sitting with her doctor to interpret
it. I agree. But you can send a note and say, you know, saw my report. Can you please call me and let me know about it? So somebody will call you back.
Right. You see, when we're talking about fibrosis of the lung, the most common form is called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. And that's a fibrotic process, progressive. It starts usually in people's 40s or so. It gets worse and worse and worse as they get older. It does, because it's an inflammatory process, it has a great increased risk of cancers. Because any inflammatory process, anything that causes inflammation in the human body raises the risk of cancer. So viral infections, chronic bacterial infections, repeated trauma, including autoimmune diseases such as the idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, all raise the risk of cancer.
And she has lupus too.
And lupus is an autoimmune disease, obviously. So she's got inflammation from that. And whenever we see a lung nodule, when we see a lump, a thick spot in the lung, that needs to be evaluated for cancer. Because as opposed to pulmonary fibrosis, which is a diffuse process, the cancer tends to be an isolated spot where you've got one cell that doubled and doubled and doubled and doubled, and now we're seeing a white spot, which is a dense area in the lung.
Now, it could also be the pneumonia, Jerry. She had pneumonia, so she had an infection.
Although pneumonia usually looks different from a nodule, but once more, we got to see the study.
Exactly.
You know, we're getting it. We're getting it secondhand from the patient, which is almost never accurate.
I know, and I don't want her to worry based on what we tell her, right?
That's right.
We don't have the report.
Yeah, and that's all. Well, that's always frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was on both the left and the right lung, and the time in April when I was in. And then followed up with a pulmonary guy. The CAT scan had showed that both lungs had, it looked like, I call it a white hot spot, but it had, on the left side, had changed in size. And that's when I said, that looks like it's changed in size, and so has the perimeter of the spot changed inside. I said, it's not a round smooth. It looked like it was
kind of ragged.
Ragged, yes. And I told him, I says, whether you like it or not, I says, I want further studies done.
Good for you.
And he agreed. And so, but I don't know for sure. I was trying to figure when I read stuff on the internet what the difference between the growths in my lungs prior to this that I've had for 5 years and or this spot that showed up in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
So I've had 5 CAT scans since January, and they all show the same thing, except that it's getting just slowly bigger.
Well, slowly bigger doesn't worry me as much as fast bigger, but yeah.
Okay.
You know, this is what you're describing to me worries me. And obviously, I think you're, you know, getting the PET scan, getting the more intense, more sensitive studies done is a smart thing to do.
Yeah, and if it's something that they're worried about right away, I'm sure somebody would have called you. Because yeah, usually if it's an emergency, they reach out. They're pretty good about that.
I'd say I'd agree with you, except she's in her 80s.
Yeah,
and
I know.
And
yeah.
Unfortunately, the common finding in modern medicine is once you hit 80, they start writing mm-hmm. you off.
Yeah, so true.
And I mean, they shouldn't, but it happens.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, one of my patients was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. And he's in his 80s, but they treated him because he's just such an amazing 80-year-old. He's
good.
So healthy. He's so active. And he went ahead. He's still on testosterone. Nobody ever took him off of testosterone. And
good.
Neither did I. And he stayed on it. And quality
he's
of life.
Well.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, but you know, if this is a lung cancer, or if this is suspicious for a lung cancer, if this is a lesion that they're seriously worried about a lung cancer, and here's what I want you to do, okay? You're standing up for yourself, and that's good. I love it when older people say, damn it, you're going to treat me. Okay, evaluate me. Don't write me off just because I lived a while. But I want you to stay aggressive and ask the guy point blank, does this look suspicious for a cancer to you? And if it looks suspicious for a cancer to you, you know, how do we approach it? And is there a way to biopsy it? Is there a way to get a piece of this tumor without an open resection? If it's on the periphery or if it's near a bronchus, if it's near a bronchus, they can usually go down with a bronchoscope,
get
close to it, and then put a needle out in and get a piece. Or if it's out on the edge of the lung, on the periphery, they can often go in just with a needle biopsy and not have to crack your chest. Because
this is at the bottom of both sides of my lungs.
Yeah, but where's that hot spot?
Yeah,
that's what they want. They want the biggest, ugliest one. And so the question is, are they going to be able to go get a piece of it without having to open your chest? I don't like major chest surgery in people in their 80s because then you're going to be in a bed for a while. And when an old lady goes to bed for a while, she goes downhill and dies.
That's right.
You can't put old folks to bed. You got to keep them moving. You know, that's always the trade-off. But if they can get a piece of this without cracking your chest, that's the ideal.
For the biopsy.
For the biopsy.
If it's an easier place to get to.
If it's in an accessible place, yes.
Accessible,
Right, either through a bronchoscope or through a transthoracic biopsy. Without having to open your chest, that would be the ideal. But again, I don't know. I haven't seen the studies either. All I'm getting is secondhand information for you, and I could be way off base.
Yeah, and I just have a funny suspicion that the lupus that I've been dealing with for years maybe is the culprit cause of all of this.
And that may well be the case, young lady, and I hope that is, but let's hope that it has not, that inflammatory process has not started a cancer, because that would be the worrisome. Okay.
Thank you, Gloria, for your call.
Hopefully that helps. Bye-bye.
Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic, will return in just a few moments. Kathy and Redmond, hang on. We'll talk to you about inflammation after we return. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Back in moments.
It's another tequila sunrise, staring slowly across the sky. Said goodbye.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat in studio today taking your calls. I think we're going to just have time for one more call. Kathy has been waiting in Redmond to talk to us. And Kathy, what's your question for the doctors?
Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Well, it's fun to hear two of my favorite doctors at the same time, so that's great. And your comment about being over 80, my dad was 97, and he was told he was too old to really get any treatment. And I really had to push. And I think that's malpractice to tell somebody that you're too old to get good health.
I agree.
Today is, thank you. As you both know, since you both know me, although you don't know who I am, I intend to live to be 104 plus. So my question is on the red vegetables and fruits, the nightshades, do they impact your arthritis? And should you be eating peppers and tomatoes if you have arthritis?
Yeah, and that's a great question.
It is.
As a general rule, they do say that the nightshades like eggplant, tomatoes, and peppers can exacerbate inflammation. And so you should be careful. I did go through a summer when I didn't eat tomatoes. It was horrible. And then I went back to them again. I took a lot of relief factor and I keep eating my tomatoes and I mean, you know, your salads are great with the peppers. So peppers I can do without sometimes. But if I, it depends on what I'm treating, right? If you are wanting to treat cancer and reduce the risk for cancer, then the green leafy vegetables, to me, are very critical in the diet. But if it's inflammation, then, you know, you can maybe reduce the amount you're eating. I know Gundry is opposed to these things, but I don't know about Gundry. I'm really having second thoughts. But I do eat my tomatoes. I enjoy them in the summer. I don't like to restrict them. If there is inflammation symptoms, then I override those symptoms with something else like relief factor. That's my first go-to.
Yeah. And I'm going to agree with her. You know, the polyphenols, especially, I mean, the purple eggplant, you've got the great polyphenols that are anti-cancer, anti-inflammation, but you've also got the fact that it is a nightshade plant, which tends to increase. So there's a balancing act there. You know, I would not be real, real heavy on them, although, like you, I love tomatoes.
Yeah.
I think they're just tasty fruit.
They are. They are. And so I've battled with that a little bit. I have reduced the intake when inflammation is, when, you know, like when I was doing my half marathons and inflammation was a bigger issue, but only temporarily. But at the same time, I did increase relief factor as well. And so you kind of increase your green tea intake. You do other things to reduce the inflammation. Now, pregnenolone, for example, you know, can increase your intake of pregnenolone temporarily. Mm-hmm. So it will offset the inflammation. I also increase glucosamine and chondroitin if inflammation is acting up. So I can do other things to minimize the inflammatory processes. But overall, the green shades have so many other benefits that override stopping them completely from your diet.
There's also a factor that there's enormous person-to-person variability and how sensitive they are
to
them.
Very true. You are very
Some people can take a lot of the nightshade plants and have very little negative response.
Right.
And other people just don't tolerate them worth a hoot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's always a matter, it's a balancing act.
Right.
Anything strong enough to help, strong enough to hurt.
Right.
Things that can hurt often have what things they do to help.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to give firm and fast rules about these things. And when you do things like Samara and I do, and most of our patients, you know, we have them on a very potent anti-inflammatory process to start with.
Yeah.
And so most of them will tolerate the nightshade plants pretty darn well.
Mm.
But if we see those inflammatory markers starting to rise, or if they're getting more joint pain, then we have to say, hey, this is one of the things we ought to cut back in this individual at this time. Does that help?
So. It does indeed. I have one follow-up on that. My fourth finger on my left hand has gone from a size 6 ring finger to 10 in the last 2 weeks. So my regular GP said he doesn't think it's broken, but if the swelling doesn't go down, I'll have to have an x-ray on it. It's very painful. So is there anything specific I can do for that joint?
I...
Well, KetoCam cream can help reduce some of the inflammation as well.
And the pain.
Yeah. And if it is red and swollen, then definitely ice it, rest it. And then, you know, Kathy, if you're close to us, maybe have an appointment for the Viasure for a little bit of sound wave therapy. We might be able to help with that as well. But I would do the conservative things, which is rest, ice it, and use KetoCam, which has a little bit of anti-inflammatory local cream, along with a muscle relaxant and pain medication. So it and arnica over the counter in the meantime, just a homeopathic anti-inflammatory, I have found it to be very helpful. I would also boost up on your intake of glucosamine and chondroitin for now.
Sounds perfect. Thank you so much. It was great to talk to both of you.
And likewise, thanks for the call. And also, as I'm thinking, glucosamine, chondroitin, yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you are in severe pain right now, look at the amount of nightshades and cut them back temporarily to let the acute inflammatory process decrease. But then after a while, the anti-cancer benefits of the nightshades are really outweigh stopping them completely from your diet.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, Kathy, you too. Take care. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Kathy. Real quick question I have, but what do you mean by nightshade?
Oh, those are like eggplant, peppers,
certain and kinds of vegetables.
Tomatoes. Yeah, okay. They are called a nightshade.
It's a family of
plants. Is that because of the dark color, maybe? I don't know. Well, they're family of vegetables.
Well, there's actually a plant called a deadly nightshade that's quite poisonous.
Mm.
And I suppose this is part of the same phylum.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is I have a stepsister who's deathly ill to green peppers. Is that a common allergy, food allergy? I mean, she just gets really sick, and you say peppers are part of this. Yeah.
But this is all peppers. This is red peppers, yellow peppers, green peppers.
Yeah, I think it is all peppers that she's allergic to, but just has a terrible reaction.
And is that reaction inflammation?
Can't breathe, and you know.
Oh, so that's more of a stronger histamine response. Yeah. So then maybe she is also allergic to their cousins, which is tomatoes and eggplants.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that could be one of the things that you might find out if you take a free health analysis test with Longevity Medical Clinic. Two free tests included in this. Tell us again what this test is about and why it's so great.
The blood test tells us about glycosylated hemoglobin, which is a window into what is happening in the brain, the skin, the eyes, bones, and risk for cancers, because it tells us what damage continuous high levels of sugar have done to your vascular tree over a course of time. And then the InBody is very critical in that it measures visceral fat to muscle ratio. And when we're 18, we definitely have a high muscle mass because the hormonal balance supports that. As we get older and through our mid-20s and onward, then we're not building more muscle actively. We have to work at it. But fat cells deposit more easily. So you may have the same weight, you may look the same, but your muscle mass is being replaced by fat. And in fact, if somebody was to take a biopsy and look at that muscle, what they would see is instead of tightly packed muscle fibers, lots of fat cells interspersed with the muscle fibers. So outwardly, it looks the same, but there's a lot more fatty tissue. And that, when it surrounds the deeper internal organs, we call it visceral fat, so as opposed to subcutaneous fat. And that visceral fat is a killer. It can increase risk for death from all causes. And your goal in life is to reduce that visceral fat and build muscle. And we tell you what your levels are. And then every time you come in for a visit, you can actually see the difference your lifestyle choices are making to that muscle mass and that visceral fat.
So risks for diabetes then, or cancers or dementia, can be picked up by these tests.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And if you have a family history that is predisposing you to any of these things, then we're even more active because, yes, you can get that if you are not proactive in preventing that. Mm-hmm. But if you recognize it, know it, and want to prevent it, you can prevent it. It's not a death sentence. You can actually prevent it.
And there's also a larger blood panel test that is offered at a not very much money as well.
Yeah, $5.95, and you do that whole blood panel, and then that brings you back for a doctor visit, mm-hmm. for a one-hour visit. And then once you have reviewed your panel at that visit, you can then still walk away and say, hey, this was great, no thank you. Or you can say, you know what you said makes sense, and I would like to continue your care for me in this clinic, and then we have you become a member and we take care of you. Your blood tests are covered, your visits are free, unlimited blood tests and visits that are done in our lab, in our clinic, mm-hmm. and by our doctors.
Three locations to choose from, one in Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. Which particular office do you kind of go around, all of them, or?
No, I live in Kirkland.
You live in Kirkland.
Okay. I manage from Kirkland.
You manage from Kirkland.
But I have been known to show up at the other spots.
Okay. Well, book your appointment today. You can call in to make that appointment for your free health analysis tests. 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-96864. You can also book them online at lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. Sign up for those health analysis today. Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Yuma, it's been lots of fun. Leading Edge Medicine, it is brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. See you next week.